say, a deep scientific understanding of what compassion is. You discover that it is a very deep seated value that carries a lot of implications to it that requires time and effort to learn exactly what is it and how is it best expressed.
Hello, this is Clay Boykin. I had the opportunity recently to participate in compassionate integrity training facilitated by the board chair for Charter for Compassion, Charlie Barker, and his wife, Conley. After the workshop, I had the opportunity to visit with him about the charter, where it is today, and where it is going in the future. Here's that conversation.
Well, I think, the Charter International now has adopted, has engaged with a byline that goes like this, cultivating compassion for global social transformation. And inherent in that byline is compassion cultivation, which is not something that just occurs by osmosis. Certainly, I think most everyone feels, if you ask them if they're compassionate, the answer would be yes.
Yeah.
But I think the real question is, how intentional is your compassion? And also, most people will admit, well, I could be more compassionate. So with that idea, with the byline and with the ultimate goal of the Charter for Compassion work in the world being one of transformation of the cultural mindset from one of self-centeredness to one of other-centeredness, all of that implies a need for compassion cultivation, education, and training, which is what compassion integrity training is really all about. I think Karen Armstrong years ago, when she was asked, well, what is compassion? She would always come back and say, well, I can tell you what it's not. You know, it's not pity. It's not soft. Although most people would say, well, it's a soft value. It's squishy. For lack of a better phraseology, warm, fuzzy bear type
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, a deeper understanding, I would even say a deep scientific understanding of what compassion is, you discover that it is a very deep seated value that carries a lot of implications to it that requires time and effort to learn exactly what is it and how is it best expressed. A rather extensive compilation of research that's been done over the last 50 years, a compilation done by James Doty at Stanford University and other researchers around the country, around the U.S. and outside the U.S., that have been doing research for, 40, 50 years. This references the Oxford Handbook of Compassion Science, a very extensive, very expensive resource, I might add, but it does cover the field, in terms of empathy. What is empathy? How is it related to compassion? What is this thing called compassion? What's the definition that these researchers work with? And there's also a more recent one that I particularly have embraced, because being in the healthcare profession myself, I'm very interested in how compassion plays out within the healthcare system. An individual, Steve Treziak, and his partner, Anthony Mozzarelli, up in New Jersey, did an extensive review of all of the literature that's related to compassion within the healthcare arena. You're talking about a book, several hundred pages of which about a third of it is actually the resources and references that they covered. So 35 pages of references.
Oh my.
So very extensive research. And what they concluded, at least in the healthcare arena, is that compassion does matter, that it can be learned,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, we've been doing in the CIT workshops. But that you, in order for it to be effective, the learning to be effective, you have to desire to want to be more compassionate and learn more about compassion. So the Oxford Handbook is it's over $100 for the book itself, but you know, well worth it. Certainly for institutions where they really want to have this kind of a referencing and resourcing.
Would you say that the compassionate integrity training is kind of the cliff notes?
I think that the compassion integrity training is more than cliff notes.
Uh-huh.
I think it is taking the science and the received knowledge that we have, is taking that knowledge and putting it in a form and a format that allows experience through specific exercises that eventually allow one, if they practice, can actually embody the principles that are taught in CIT. And let me hasten to add that compassion integrity training is only one of several available comprehensive compassion training programs that exist currently.
Well, so this one, where was it developed?
It was developed in Life University in Atlanta, Georgia.
Life University, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. The individuals who put together the program, Michael Carlin and his colleague Brendan De Silva, who many folks, you know, they know him to be a person who's been involved in this compassion work, works very closely with the Dalai Lama and worked very closely with the Dalai Lama's Sea Learning Program that was announced and just came out in India 3 or 4 months ago.
Hmm.
And De Silva works at Emory University now, which is crosstown from Life University, and they have developed a cognitive-based compassion training program, very similar to CIT, with some exceptions, but they're all very comprehensive programs. You're talking 10 weeks, 2 hours per week with lots of practices and exercises. There's a whole Compassion Education Institute on the Charter for Compassion website, where you can go. There's some signature courses that are very they're MINI courses that you can take that have been designed specifically by the Charter for folks who want to learn more about compassion. And then we've also, of course, embraced these, as I would call them, off-the-shelf courses like CIT, like
right.
CBCT, and Jim Doty's work, and Thupin Jinpa's work with Compassion Cultivation Training Program. All three of those are very comprehensive type of training. One of the things that I do want to mention, which I think is significant, and that is when individuals read the Charter for Compassion, they're excited about it. They say, well, gosh, this is like I did 12 years ago. This is a no-brainer. Why wouldn't I affirm the Charter for Compassion? Almost immediately upon affirmation, individuals ask me the question, okay, what's the next step?
Yeah.
And I have learned over the number of years I've been involved with the Charter is that my recommendation is that you learn more specifically about what this thing called compassion really is. Mm-hmm. And that's where all of these various courses come into play. Well, I think one of the major missions besides compassion cultivation, that that the charter has is its cities campaign, its Compassionate Cities Initiatives, of which there are 450 throughout the world, in 52 countries. There are probably of those initiatives, and when I say initiatives, I'm talking about an expressed interest by those particular cities or communities in becoming, quote, an official a compassionate city. Of those, there is about 115 that have actually affirmed the charter, either officially or with a vote of the mayor and the city council. But in each one of those, really requires grassroots organization, organizations at the grassroots level that say, we appreciate the charter, we embrace the values that are expressed in the charter. As some people say, you know, it basically talks about the good old-fashioned golden rule, you know, which everybody recognizes as a very core value to try to achieve. But in any case, those cities have affirmed it and have programs in place, activities in place, compassionate action in place to put substance into this idea of being a compassionate city. And for each city, it's different.
I guess the city council even gets involved.
They do. They do.
And they
do. Every city does it differently. I've experienced what we would call top-down approval from the mayor, city council, down into the grassroots organizations, interfaith groups, businesses, arts, environment, various organizations in the city come online with the top-down approach. But in, I would say, the majority of cities, though, it really begins at the grassroots level with particular organizations that have read the charter and affirmed the charter, and then move it forward, understanding in their grassroots groups where the issues are within their city. It may be homelessness that's a primary concern. It could be food poverty. It could be if you're a city like Dallas, for example, that is a receiver of immigrants, of refugees, significant numbers, then this becomes an area of the city of great concern to be able to support them in a welcoming way. So every city is different, but most begin at the grassroots level and then builds up to a point where the mayor and city council are approached. And when you've got all these grassroots organizations saying, we've done this, we want our city to do this in an intentional way, then all of a sudden you've got the mayor and city council and city managers all coming on board. So, yeah.
In addition to your board chair role, you've got a role with Compassion DFW, right? Dallas-Fort Worth.
Correct.
And so you're overseeing those efforts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kind of exciting things have you got going?
I was going to say very, very different roles. At the international level, it's more of an organizational role, more of gathering people, like-minded people from around the world that serve on the board of trustees to define the mission of the charter and to work with other international organizations at that particular level, which is exciting, but you're not as involved in the programmatics where I would say the rubber meets the road. But my role in Compassion DFW, which came first, chicken or the egg? For me, Compassion DFW came first, and it was only because of the activities that we've done in this area that I got more involved on the international level and hold that chairmanship, chairpersonship currently. Mm-hmm. But here locally in Compassion DFW, just a lot of exciting grassroots level work with, for example, Thanksgiving Square, which is interfaith group from the Dallas area, Richardson, Texas, which is a compassionate city, part of Compassionate DFW. Their interfaith group, which was started by the encouragement of the mayor of the city. The city is so diverse in its faith traditions that the mayor very perceptively saw that needed to bring people together of different faiths in a way. And so we have, and it's been 8 years. And we do a number of activities on a monthly basis, all the way from feeding children everywhere to compassion walks on the International Day of Peace and compassion conferences, which just in the last couple of years, we've developed a compassion conference that's well attended and with all kinds of interesting programs that, you know, exist throughout the city, and we just bring them together in a way that people can participate and enjoy, and maybe even join in on those particular activities.
So, you know, that's really interesting when you're talking about the interfaith part of it.
Mm-hmm. I think the interesting thing, evolutionary-wise, is that we have moved from this this period of okay, well, we're going to be tolerant to one of respect and appreciation for the other by learning something of that faith tradition on a regular basis. Over a meal, as I say, three cups of tea. By your third cup of tea, you are friends.
Yeah.
And you begin to relate as friends. Even though, I think that more recently in the interfaith community, it's moving more towards one of understanding the differences. Mm-hmm. And by understanding the differences, you understand that faith tradition even more so than just understanding the commonalities that you have. And what many faith traditions have found is that the individual's faith in their own tradition is strengthened during that process, which is kind of a, you know, you think differently. You think, well, if I learn more about it and this sort of thing, then you always are a little concerned about proselytizing. But that's one of the things that's sort of a deep tacit understanding in the interfaith community is that there's no proselytizing. Mm-hmm. It is relating and understanding and appreciating and embracing your common humanity, actually, because we find out, well, gosh, you know, Joe, who's of a different faith tradition, he has a family, he has kids that go to school, they need food, clothing, shelter, just like I do, and mm-hmm. you just carry that story on to where it's, there's, even though there are differences, they don't separate anymore.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's pretty exciting work.
Well, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to bring to light, that you'd like to share?
I guess if I had one hope for the world, or one hope, it would be that individuals would, first of all, see the need for this value of compassion, and based on the science, I might add, would understand that it can be learned, that you can learn more about it, but you have to want it. So my prayer would be that individuals would desire to be more compassionate, that they would desire to learn more about what this value called compassion is all about, learn about it, embody those skills, the skills of compassion, and then go out in the world and be more compassionate.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share. I appreciate it.